The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in this Washington Times Communities column, Forbidden Siegel Talk.
It's time now for The Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but with all the scandals going on in Washington, why doesn't God do something? He did do something, my friend. He did do something. First, he created people with free will. Then, in the case at least of most of my listeners, he allowed us to be born in the greatest country that ever existed, the United States of America. Now, I know that on some college campuses they're saying it's fascist to call us the greatest country in the world. Okay, you don't believe we're the greatest country in the world? Fine. Where are you planning to move to? I don't think you're planning to move anywhere because you know you will not have more rights and freedoms than you have here. And that is, we're going to have those rights and freedoms for at least another 5 minutes of our history. Hopefully we can make that 10 or 15. That's why we're here today. But there's also a lesson to be learned from the days of old, the days of the kings, the days of the Bible. And that's that whatever political system we're under, God is still sovereign, and in his sovereignty, he gives countries the leaders they deserve. Let me say that again. God gives countries the leaders they deserve. Now, when you look at the leaders we have right now, that ought to send chills up your spine. This present administration was not only voted into power. See, in our case, we deserve them because we voted for them. They were voted into power twice. Numerous scandals, all kinds of stuff broke out about Barack Obama before each election. At least 15, 16 things both times. Any one of them would have killed somebody else's career. This guy was voted into power twice with a lot of support, I should say, from my fellow evangelical Christians. Now, look, I mean no disrespect if you voted for Obama. I don't mean to imply that those of you who voted for Obama never think. I don't mean to imply that those of you who voted for Obama never study. I don't mean to imply that those of you who voted for Obama are not intelligent. I simply wish that you had thought a little harder, studied a little harder, and tapped into your intelligence a little more at the time. But joining me today is a man who did not vote for Obama, a man who does think and study before going to the ballot box, a man who has a lot to say about our times. Today he's going to offer commentary on several interesting news story. Say hello to my rotating co-host, Matt Simone. Matt, welcome to our program.
Thanks for having me, Bob. I appreciate it.
It's good to have you here. Now, it's kind of funny because as those of you that have been listening, we sounded like a couple of movie geeks, particularly Star Trek geeks, these last few weeks. If you're wondering whether we're moving on to the news, boy, are we, because we learned that the IRS are a bunch of Star Trek geeks.
That's
we
right,
do.
That's true.
Our tax dollars hard at work. They're having Star Trek parties. Well, okay. The Star Trek party we had on my show, you didn't have to pay me taxes to listen to it. But it's kind of funny because I'm talking to Matt on the phone saying, what do you want to talk to me? And he's all excited because he has some things to say about Star Trek too. And I'm saying, Matt, okay, but let's not do three whole shows about Star Trek. Actually, we talked about other movies as well, including Oz the Great and Powerful. Now, you can reach us and join into these discussions. You're always welcome to give us a call. These days, most of my listeners either get me through a Facebook, Twitter, or they write me through questions at bobsiegel.net. And last week, Diana, responding to the show, she wrote us in real time. She texted me or emailed me while she was listening. I didn't catch it, so I want to read her comment now. So this happened last week, but she says, listening to you now on the radio and wondering what you think of the new Superman movie. I haven't paid attention. When does that movie come out? It looks like it might be good. Then she says, I'm with Dana. I never liked The Wizard of Oz. Okay, well, let's take care of Superman first, then we'll take care of Dana and The Wizard of Oz. I believe it's June 14th, Diana, and it does look like it's going to be good. It's actually called Man of Steel. They're not calling it Superman this time. As for Dana, it was kind of weird, Matt, because last week I was just going on and on. I'm so critical of the movies, and this new one, Oz the Great and Powerful. I mentioned it was the first other version of the Oz series I've seen that I've ever liked. And while I'm going on and on, to kind of throw in my trump card, to kind of put the icing on the cake, I was trying to make this point that even Dana liked it. I was making the point that I took Dana, after I saw it, I took Dana to see it. I thought she'd love it. And my point was she didn't even like the original Wizard of Oz movie, but she liked this one. But as I started talking about that, we spiraled into a tangent, as we always do. Well, how could Dana have not liked The Wizard of Oz? So now here we have Diana saying, I'm with Dana, I didn't like The Wizard of Oz. And then that led to me admitting that me and Mark Boobian and one of our friends are the only three people on Earth that didn't like Forrest Gump. And by the time we were done, I forgot to make my main point. My main point was Dana loved Oz the Great and Powerful.
Oh, there it is.
It was a long road. I was going to say long road to a short house, but we never even got to the house. So Dana, my apologies. I meant to say this movie was so good that even somebody who did not like the original Wizard of Oz liked it. And I should say, after we saw it, Dana was interested in watching the original Wizard of Oz again. And this time, she did like it. She liked the
thing. Drum roll, please.
Nick is clapping. Nick is giving you a standing ovation in the other room right now.
That's so funny because, I do listen to the shows even when I'm not on and such. And when that was all going on and stuff, I found it very, very, he was gushing. He was gushing over that movie.
I loved that movie. usually with a movie, I find some flaw in it. And I'm sure if I got it on Blu-ray and watch it again, I'd find something. But your first viewing, that's the accurate viewing. That's the best barometer, your first impression. Anyway, you did want to say a little bit about Star Trek. Not too much.
Yeah.
We don't want to become too much like Star Trek geeks. A little more on Star Trek, then we'll move on.
Yeah, well, what I was going to do more or less is, because I am a sci-fi kind of guy and I like discussing those kind of things, but I just sort of wanted to allude to a couple of the characters and some of the concepts that are in that I think are great topics and have some Christian concepts that I thought we might be able to discuss. So we're not going to focus that much on it, but I may allude to them. So the first one I wanted to allude to was, where did some of these concepts get their origination? And the first one that popped to mind was the Prime Directive, which dictates that there can be no interference with internal development of an alien civilization. And as I was listening to that, it just sort of jogged my memory that sort of sounds like deism.
Okay, let's define some terms for new people in the audience. A deist is one who does believe in God, but not a personal God.
Right.
Not a God who involves himself. So you're saying in Star Trek, in the arrogance of the Federation thinking that they're in a way
all-knowing, all-powerful,
but going to these planets of lesser intellect, they don't want to become like gods. They don't want to interfere.
Right. And they want things to go over its natural course, like a deist would say, as God started it all, then he steps back and he let it play out.
There is some arrogance behind man in Star Trek. Now, what I also liked about Star Trek too, at least the original one, is Roddenberry every much showed what he used to call the savage, darker side of our nature, which the Bible would call the sinful side. And I do know that the Vietnam War influenced Roddenberry a lot. Like Rod Serling in those days, Rod Serling in the Twilight Zone, they discovered that they could say things through science fiction that the networks probably wouldn't let them say if they just did a TV show that was about the Vietnam War. So the whole idea there was that we shouldn't have interfered in Vietnam, which sounded good at the time. Of course, when you notice what North Vietnam did and how they went and massacred the people afterwards, maybe we shouldn't have left Vietnam. I don't know.
So with that same idea is, we just want people to know out there that we, I think, and Bob will agree with me, that we do believe God's involved. It says in Scripture that God orders our steps. And I even was managed to pull up two different surveys that said that 82% of Americans believe that they depend on God for help and guidance in making decisions.
They do. Now, sometimes they form and fashion a deity to their own,
concepts
and desires.
Yeah. So I thought that was pretty interesting. So that was one of the things. The next one that sort of came to my attention is the quote that's used quite often. It was used in this last movie, and it's the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
Made popular in The Wrath of Khan.
Or the one. Okay, right. Which was the continuation at the Wrath of Khan at the end. And it sounded a lot like the story in John 11. And in John 11, verses 47, we have a scenario where the Sanhedrin was together, the chief priest was there, the Pharisees were there, and then all of a sudden, if I can read it for you, if we let him go on like this, all men will believe in him, meaning Jesus, and the Romans will come and take away both our place and our nation. But one of them, Caiaphas, who was high priest that year, said to them, "You know nothing at all, nor do you take into account that it is expedient that one man die for the people and that the whole nation not perish." Now, he did not say this on his own initiative, but being high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus was going to die for the nation, and not for the nation only, but in order that he may also gather together into one the children of God who are scattered abroad.
Yeah, now what's chilling about this, Matt, is Caiaphas was a corrupt high priest.
Yes, that's right.
The days of Aaron's family inheriting the priesthood or having some spiritual motivation had long since been over. The high priesthood went to the people that could give the Romans the biggest bribe. Be that as it may, get back again to the sovereignty of God. God will honor the paradigm of a nation. As high priest, Caiaphas should have been hearing from God. And he did.
He did.
It seems like this was a real prophecy, but Caiaphas was filtering it with his own damaged, corrupt sensory equipment. So whereas God's trying to tell him, Jesus is going to die as the prophets predicted for your sins so that you could repent, so that there could be atonement, so there could be forgiveness. He's hearing this, but the way he's interpreting it is, oh, yeah, well, Jesus is causing a faction, so if we kill Jesus, there'll be no more faction, and then the Romans won't take our land away, and then that's how Jesus will save our nation, by dying. Isn't it interesting how even when God speaks, even when God is involved, people hear what they want to hear.
And that's it. And the simple fact of the matter, sometimes we might define sin as selfishness, and he was just looking it through a selfish lens. Like we said, he was just looking at it, he goes, hey, I'm trying to protect my self-interest here, and it is better that one man die than the rest of the nation go under. So that, I thought that was pretty interesting that that concept sort of may have come from Christianity. Now, let me share another one with you. I found one portion of the movie that was pretty interesting, and I had to search hard to find these people's names, but it was Thomas and Rima Harwood, and they were the parents of the daughter, the young girl that was sick, who Khan ultimately helped. And then he was the one who helped blow up part of Starfleet.
Really? They had those names that detailed look?
Yeah,
were the names mentioned in the movie?
No, they weren't named in the movie.
It's this backlog?
Yeah.
Boy, Matt, you're making me feel better. I'm a Star Trek geek, maybe 3 point on the Richter scale. You're way up in the stratosphere if you went and researched that.
Well, you know, I thought, you know, when I come on this show here, I want to actually know what I'm talking about. But the interesting thing about that is that is one of those other questions that the movie brought up. And I've sort of experienced because some of you might remember, I had a terminal illness. And the question is, what would you do to stay alive? Or what would you do to have another person in your family survive with some kind of traumatic circumstance? And, you know, that father was obviously willing to do whatever he thought was necessary. So I always thought that was another maybe minuscule point that people didn't pick up. But here was another one.
But he was doing what was necessary at the expense of killing all these other people
to
save his daughter.
Well, and there's that whole selfishness about it. You know, when push comes to shove, and if we start thinking about what's in our own best interest instead of the best interest of other people, we will do whatever it takes, which is probably not the way we should live. Another one was this, that there was the time during the movie where there was a moral dilemma. And here Kirk was given all these photon torpedoes and he was supposed to shoot them off into this asteroid where Khan was and not knowing what he was ultimately doing. But you know what he did is he listened to Spock. And biblically, we're supposed to heed wise counsel.
So a wise counsel in the Bible would be somebody with pointy ears?
Yeah.
Somebody wise.
Yes. Yeah.
Somebody wise.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
But the idea is this, that it was interesting that, you know, he was willing to at least take some kind of counsel around him. So I thought I was trying to pick out some positive things that may have happened in that movie.
There were. One thing I have liked about Star Trek, and I think this is true of science fiction in general, is there usually is a lot of interesting social commentary and commentary on the nature of man. And before I was a Christian, when science fiction or other types of fiction was all I was reading, when I wasn't willing to read the Bible because I didn't believe in the Bible, God did speak and communicate through those things. So it is significant.
Well, you know, anytime I start talking about movies, it seems like the discussion all refers back to motivation and the action of the people in the movies and such. You know, but the truth is, when you're really watching a movie, it's not about motives and the actions of the fictional characters. Basically, we're all being set up. It's our perceptions. So basically, everything depicted is designed by the writers and the directors to inform the audience in a specific way, either consciously or unconsciously. So one of the topics I wanted to bring up right now was the whole thing about this Admiral Marcus, who was one of the co-villains in this thing. And it makes you wonder.
Yeah, her father was Khan.
Yeah. Well, no.
But her father. Her father was the admiral that was trying to defeat Khan.
Exactly.
That's right.
Exactly. That's right. Yeah. You know, but he was the one who revived the madman Khan and wanted to use him as an ally in a secret war. So how does that relate today? So, you know, I was doing some research and Bob was just talking about the past and, you know, we can learn from the past. Well, there was a movie documentary that was called The Fog of War and was based on the life of Robert S. McNamara. And he was the Secretary of Defense during the Cuban Missile Crisis and during the Vietnam War. And in that, the name of the movie was called The 11 Lessons from the Life of Robert S. McNamara. And three of the lessons I found to be very, very interesting in regard to this kind of topic. And one of them was, in order to do good, you may have to engage in evil. That was one of his lessons that he learned. Another one was, never say never. And the last
Sean Connery taught us that. Yeah, right?
But that was off of the branding, wasn't that? That wasn't really within the.
He said he'd
broccoli.
Never do a James Bond movie again, and then he did one.
Yeah. So. And then the other one is you can't change human nature. And so McNamara actually believed that war was so complex that the human mind was incapable of comprehending all the complexities. And basically, he believed that human nature would almost make it impossible to end war and that rational creatures are only rational to a certain point. So the whole idea is, so I want you to keep those sort of concepts in mind as we discuss things.
I would give him 2 out of 3. I don't think I would agree that you sometimes have to do evil to do good. I would say you sometimes have to do something less than the ideal.
Yeah.
There are times in the Bible where God will allow people to do less than the ideal. Christians are used to thinking everything's either sinful or it's not.
Right.
But there was a third category. There were things that were not God's ideal design, but he wasn't telling people they couldn't do it, therefore they weren't disobeying him, therefore it was not a sin.
But it makes a great point for me if I just use the words he used, Bob, so I'm going to stick with that.
Okay.
No. All right. So anyway, so during that same Cuban Missile Crisis, there was another general named Curtis LeMay. Now, this guy was really interesting also because when the whole Cuban Missile Crisis was going on, and here's McNamara with the Department of Defense, this general actually had 18 nukes that they're totally under his control that the National Security Council and President Kennedy did not even know about. And his rationale was that they didn't know enough about war for him to even consider bringing them into the dialogue. And you talk about arrogance. And so when you look at the Star Trek and this Admiral Marcus, maybe he was like another LeMay. So, you know, because I'm trying to get into the mindset of some of these guys like this LeMay or Marcus. And when you're looking at the Federation, you know, the Federation believes in equal political, economic, social, civil rights for everybody. And then all of a sudden this guy is going, yeah, but who's going to buck it up? You know, who's going to strap on the guns and who's going to go fight against these Klingons who are encroaching on our airspace? It wasn't these guys. And he said, you know, well, I could be wrong, but, you know, I'm trying to protect my country. I'm trying to protect my nation. I'm trying to protect the universe. Well, am I a patriot or am I just delusional?
Yeah.
You know, when you start looking at these guys. And so then it brings us to the matter of Khan and maybe his motivation, because he said his motivation was love of crew, the family. And
well, he also said his motivation was I'm a superior genetically breeded intellect and I have a right to conquer the world.
Right. And so and by definition, he was a terrorist.
Yeah.
I mean, he just was a terrorist. And so I wanted to take a look at and I did some research on what the origin of a terrorist looks like. and it raises some pretty interesting questions as we go along here. So last week when I was looking at Bob's website, he alluded to some of these questions, but we really didn't get a chance to discuss them, so I wanted to take a look at them and maybe see if it'd be interesting. So do terrorists start sincere or become evil? That was one of the questions Bob had. Or do they become misguided? Are they deceived or are they just evil? Does their means justify the end? And is it ever true that the means do justify the end? I mean, we can even look in our own Bible in the Old Testament, and people nowadays and even back then would probably look and go, gosh, that God was really vengeful the way he went and he destroyed those other civilizations. But the truth was there was a motivation behind it, and that motivation was pure. I wish that could be said for most of us in regard to it.
Right.
So one of the things that's necessary for terror to happen, it has to have a focus. So in the movies, whoever the villain is, their basis for revenge is focused on somebody. So in that particular case with Khan, it's Starfleet, the Federation. So they must have did something wrong. They did something arbitrary. You know, they've been struggling against these people all their life. And where is Starfleet? Starfleet's on Earth. So Earth is the seat of the Federation and Earth is the target. Does that sound like anything we're going through right now?
Yeah,
the United States.
Sounds a lot like what we're going through right now.
You know, so that was one of the things that I was looking at. And I noticed also when I was doing some reading on terrorism that there was a pattern to terrorism. There was like this set pattern. And it sort of starts like this. It's not right. So what happens is there's some kind of social or economic deprivation. Then it goes to it's not fair. So it's some kind of inequity or resentment. They start comparing each other. And then it goes, it's your fault. So they start blaming and they start attributing the blame to some individual or some ideology. And then last, it becomes you're evil. And they start generalizing and stereotyping, dehumanizing and demonizing an enemy or a cause.
These are the terrorists calling their targets the evil ones.
Yes. And so this is a process, it seems, that all terrorists go through, that it's not right, it's not fair, it's your fault, and we're going to get you. And that is one of the things I found out. The other thing I found out, there's like three types of terrorists. I mean, I was really intrigued in looking at this. And like I said, it all got spawned by this movie. But there's the type one terrorist is a person who really has a strong black and white view of right and wrong. The other thing about them is they're usually really young boys that they get recruited, and they're during this developmental stage that they call the retributive justice or vendetta stage. I didn't know there was one like that in our development. And it's the whole eye for an eye kind of thing. And so when you've grown up in this kind of culture where there's intergenerational war, intercommunal war, some of these adults never outgrow this vendetta, and they're trapped in this righteous indignation. And so for them, they know there's a difference between right or wrong, except if it's part of the cause, and then it's just justified. So I found that interesting.
Yeah.
You know, the other type two was folks are motivated by religious beliefs, which seems like most of the
terrorism. Which is mostly what's going on now.
Right.
It is an ideal, because people will say things like, oh, well, when we went and bombed Afghanistan, we were creating more terrorists. Hey, after they bombed the World Trade Center, didn't they already show that they hated us about as much as they could possibly hate us? What more could we do? Well, I'll tell you what we can do. We can come back after this break. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show with Matthew Simone.
As if you haven't figured it out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life. But Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170. 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539, W&S Electric.
Do your kids ask you questions about God and the Bible that you can't answer? Sign yourself or your child up for a class with lots of solid answers at educateforlife.org before someone else gives them the wrong answers. Are you tired of not knowing what to say when your friends and family ask you questions about God and the Bible? Get equipped by signing up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone asks you, "How do you know the Bible's true?" do you say something like, "I just know it is"? If you're tired of giving lame answers, sign up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone says that God isn't real, wouldn't it be fun to prove that He is? Quickly, like a verbal ninja? By using science and logic. Sign up for a class at educateforlife.org with Christian apologetics teacher Kevin Conover, and you'll learn how to do that. Educateforlife.org. If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's weekly column for Washington Times Communities. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net, S-I-E-G-E-L, bobsiegel.net. Here, you can download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net.
KCBQ 1170. I'm your host, Bob Siegel, joined with one of our favorite rotating co-hosts, Matt Simone.
Hey, Bob. Okay, so we're talking a little bit about different types of terrorists, but you know what? I want to move on at this particular time, and one of the things I would like
you
to talk...
You didn't want to tell us about the terrorist whose mother never bought him a sled, and
yeah,
that's why he became a terrorist?
Yeah, okay. You know, there's a... There's all sorts of kind of motivations that people have, but you know what? I had a story here that I thought maybe you guys would be interested in, because when I heard it, I was sort of appalled. And it's one of those kind of sad stories that just should never happen in the United States. So I don't know if you guys heard of the story about the story in Southwest Oregon in the county of Grand Pass. There was a woman who was actually assaulted and raped.
Is this the woman that called 911?
Yes.
I saw that.
Yes.
This is harrowing.
Yeah. This is a woman who actually was being assaulted and raped by her ex-boyfriend. She called 911 and the dispatcher couldn't do anything because the county had no money for police.
And one of the reasons they had no money is some of the stuff they were using their money for, like saving the spotted
Absolutely.
Owl. Thank God that spotted owl got saved.
Right, because it was a huge logging community, and what happened, and that just got put away. So that community really only had 6 deputies for 80,000 people and no money to protect its citizens.
What a nightmare.
Isn't that just absolutely?
What a nightmare. The times that we are living in right now, how could that happen in this country?
And for a dispatcher I felt sort of bad for the dispatcher, because the dispatcher goes, well, I hope he doesn't come back. And if he does, well, tomorrow you can go to the sheriff's office and report something.
Yeah, I'll call the sheriff tomorrow. Of course, if he breaks in with a gun now, that would be unfortunate. My God.
And I guess there's that argument for the Second Amendment. But let's move on. So, Bob, I'm going to ask you a question. So there's a couple different scandals that are going on. One's the AP, one's Benghazi, and one's IRS. Which one bothers you the most?
I'm pretty bothered by all of them, but I think that since we have as our co-host tax attorney Matt Simone, I'd like to at least get your opinion on the IRS. I've got to imagine you got some small opinion about that.
Well, yeah. Okay. So here we go. So the
are we ever going to dismantle that flea-bitten organization? Probably not.
It's never going to happen. But did you see? I just read in the paper today that they were again trying to propose a flat tax in California. 6.5% flat tax.
So what, to pay for the raise that Sacramento just voted in for itself?
Well, I can't comment about that. I don't know what they're going to use. Obviously, all I know is based on all the reports, as far as California is concerned, they're feeling good in Sacramento because they got a lot of cash flowing in, but they got about $600 billion of debt.
And have they recognized that most businesses are moving to Texas and other I had an economist on our show a few years ago. He said the most profound thing I've ever heard.
What's that?
He said, these people that are taxing us, they don't realize that when a parasite is sucking blood, it has to leave the host alive. Once you kill the host, there's no more blood. I don't think they figured that out in Sacramento or in Washington.
Well, maybe not. So let's go over to the IRS. Well, you know, and we're talking about the IRS scandal. There's more than one, so I'll get to the other ones. But let's start to the
big ones are these tax-exempt groups where they wanted to see if they were conservative or Tea Party or pro-life.
So that was the one where there were groups that had the name Tea Party, Patriot, and such, or conservative organizations that were being targeted, and they were actually 501c4 organizations. So those are the kind of organizations that are supposed to be civic leagues, other corporations operating exclusively for the promotion of social welfare. So what's social welfare?
Well, that could be a broad definition.
Right.
Three people could define that differently.
Yeah, it's primarily engaged in promoting the common good and general welfare of the people of the community. Now, the reason why they use these organizations is because, one, they're tax exempt, so the money coming in isn't taxed to them, but the people that make the contributions really don't get a tax write-off for it. But they have been, let's say, they start calling them what you would call dark money, because they go into these organizations, and these organizations can use these for political matters, but they can't support or attack a particular candidate. But they can basically trumpet a cause.
See, now, how do you tiptoe around that? Because if you believe in a certain cause, don't you know which candidate agrees with or doesn't disagree with that cause?
Well, but that's all the concept behind it.
I mean, on this show, I would say, as a Christian show, I would say, look, I'm not going to tell you that if you voted for Obama, you're not saved.
Right.
That's about as much as I'll separate the religion out. But I'm still going to, if the guy's still doing something evil, I'm still going to call it that.
Well, and that's what these organizations do for the most part. What they're doing is they are trumpeting their position, or they're calling out the other side in general, not an individual, but maybe a party or the circumstances and such. And so we had this 501c4. Now, the thing that I find very, disconcerting regarding all these scandals that are going on is this, that there's just so much darn contradiction, and you just have this feeling that there's this huge bureaucracies out there that doesn't really care about anybody else except its own existence.
Bureaucracy takes on a life of its own and never dies.
That's exactly it. So we have these characters. There's not less than like six different players in here, and we can go through the list, but some of them knew as far as 2 years ago. There was a deputy commissioner that knew in May of 2012. There was actually the reigning commissioner, Douglas Shulman. He knew in spring of 2012. Jack Lew knew in March of 2013. The chief White House staff, April 13. And our own president found out supposedly in the news on May 10th of 2013. So it goes back almost 2 years.
Okay, now I have to ask you, Matt. Let's. I hear all these pundits on TV talk in circles. You're a straightforward guy.
Yeah.
Regarding the AP... Yeah. Regarding the IRS, regarding Benghazi, did Obama know what was going on all the time?
Well,
did he in fact come? I mean, aren't these guys marionettes? Isn't he the puppeteer?
Well, you know what? I am gonna point you over to an article written by Bob plausible deniability.
Oh, yes, but you saw what my point was at the end.
I did see your point.
I ended it by saying I don't think the deniability was all that plausible.
Right, and so you're really
They're using that.
Yeah, you're really down to the point.
Well, those
are
our choices. Either he's the biggest disconnected moron who ever lived, or he's a crook that was in control of anything. We can't have it both ways.
Did he ask
There's
me a
no
question?
In between.
He asked me a question, and he answered it again, Dana. Okay, yes, you're absolutely right.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean...
I concur.
Well, you said you threw me back to my own article. What was I supposed to do? Speaking of Star Trek, there was a little bit of a time loop there.
There it is. So the bottom line comes down to I am with you. This person is either absolutely so. I mean, let's talk about this. The IRS came in 157 times into the White House. Didn't you get a clue that maybe the guy was up to something? There was something to talk about. I mean, you're talking, I mean, they're pushing talking points 2 weeks on a video when they knew with less than 24 hours what was going on. I mean, you're talking about the IRS scandal here, and you got a situation where these people knew 2 years ago and nobody decided to mention it to anybody.
And in Benghazi, somebody tells the soldiers to stand down, but they don't go to the commander-in-chief and ask his opinion. He didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, tempting as it is to call our president a moron because his policies are in fact moronic, the truth is he's not. He's an extremely intelligent person because he runs an extremely intelligent campaign.
Right.
He runs a horrible presidency, but boy, can he run a campaign and that shows intelligence. So of course he knew. Of course he knew.
Well, you know, and then look at all the talking points, Bob. They're all the same. You ask somebody in the IRS, did you know? Geez, I wasn't involved with that.
Jumping Jiminy, did they do that? I had no idea.
Yeah, let's talk to Eric Holder. Well, gosh, no, I requested myself from that one.
Oh, Eric Holder. Yeah. No, this is the best.
Yeah.
We need to get Eric Holder to investigate Eric Holder because he is the attorney general.
Well, how about this? On May 15th, he went under oath to Congress and he said this, I quote, I never was involved in potential prosecution of the press. I do not believe it's a wise policy. The day before he signed off on the search warrant on the for the testimony from James Rosen of Fox. That was the day before he signed it. But then in his own, and here's the thing that scared
me.
Did
I sign that?
Yeah.
Gee, I suppose maybe I did.
But here's the scariest thing. When you hear all these people talk about it on TV or anybody that's in politics, nobody will call it a lie. Everybody, well, he must have misstated or he must not have, but nobody will call it a lie. People, what I'm trying to tell you, this guy is the head attorney of the whole United States.
And it's easy to know when Eric Holder is lying because his lips are moving.
I concur. That's absolutely concur.
You couldn't write this stuff. You couldn't make this up for an episode of 24.
No. And so it really does come down to the simple fact.
Love the latest one. Eric Holder wants to... throw a special press conference.
Oh, he had it already.
Yeah. But it's going to be off the record.
Yeah, off the record.
So don't you think his motivation is, well, if it's off the record, I'll spill the beans, but now you can't say anything, or now I can come after you legally. And now he pits press against press.
But the press
ABC can go, oh, I was there. Yeah. And we happen to know that what he did wasn't so bad, but we can't give you any details.
But the press actually leaked it. They were leaking it. Yeah, they were leaking. They
so
were
the
leaking.
People that took the people who leaked it. Was it ABC?
Yeah, there was ABC and a couple other press organizations actually leaked information because nothing was said. There was nothing there.
So
there
it was just a bunch of mumbo jumbo.
Yeah, it was just like, oh, kumbaya.
What do you think he was trying to accomplish with this? Pitting press against press or putting the press in a position where he could really go after them if they broke the confidentiality law? That was as much as I could figure out.
Well, if you really want my opinion, I think it was predicated on the simple fact of the matter is they've been homers all this time for the administration, and then all of a sudden they were wandering from the flock, and this was an attempt to bring them back
them
into the fold.
Did they sing kumbaya?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
This just brings a tear to my eye.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so now I don't give a sigh of relief, everybody, if Holder steps down, because once again, he is a marionette.
Yeah,
Obama is the puppeteer.
Yeah. If I had my druthers, everybody's calling for his resignation, so I'd rather keep him in.
Keep him in till he finally squeals and says, look, our commander-in-chief told me to do all these things, because by an incredible coincidence, they're doing everything that Obama has said he wanted done.
Or if he doesn't squeal on the president, then you're going to have a lot of politicians who are going to have a lot of fodder for the next election that's coming up in 2014.
This Eric Holder's been a nightmare from the beginning.
Oh my gosh.
When he first comes into office, first thing out of his mouth, this country needs to have a serious conversation about race. We're too cowardly to think about race. Oh, really? I thought we had just elected our first African-American president. And then when the Black Panthers go and do voter intimidation, he won't prosecute them.
How about that?
But on the other hand, if the Tea Party wants to pass a law that says we should have a driver's license and an ID when we should vote, oh, well, we can't pass that because that would lead to voter intimidation. And then, of course, we don't. Let's just mercifully not even mention Fast and Furious. I mean, this guy... He should have been out of there a long time ago, except that I know he's doing the president's bid. And Jay Carney, don't you feel sorry for that guy?
Oh, my gosh.
All he's doing is telling them what they're telling him to say, and he's going to end up perjuring himself.
And the worst thing about that guy is, I mean, sometimes he doesn't even know what he said. He's not even keeping like a timeline.
He probably practices in the mirror and says, now, how do I do these talking points with a straight face this morning?
Yeah, maybe that it, or what he's doing is this. I mean, they have the most convenient memory. So can I read something to you guys? I want to read you something. Here is something that is from our past history, and it goes like this. He has... acting personally and through his subordinates and agents, endeavored to cause, in violation of the constitutional rights of citizens, income tax audits or other income tax investigations to be initiated or conducted in a discriminatory manner. These are the words of Article 2, Section 1, Articles of Impeachment, adopted by the House Judiciary Committee July 29, 1974, regarding Watergate.
Oh, and aren't we hearing all the same things that back in the days when the news commentators were trying to, people were going on, I guess not 2020, but back 60 Minutes, things like that, Meet the Press. What the people around Nixon were saying was, oh, Larry, the American people don't want to hear about some scandal at the Watergate. They care about the issues. The American people want to talk about jobs. Aren't we hearing that same drivel right now? Shouldn't that be the biggest yellow light that something smells in Denmark?
So the bottom line, I guess, in this, we don't have any evidence right now whether the president was implicated in these matters. But the simple fact of the matter
is— I would say we have evidence. Maybe we don't have any proof. I think we have
circumstantial evidence.
Yeah, boy.
I mean, you can't have all those people and senior officials that are just right next to him. I mean, he's talking to these guys every day and not knowing anything.
If the guy's just catatonic and doesn't have a clue what's going on, if he's an android that they programmed just to give speeches, maybe he had nothing to do with it. That's about what it would take for that to be true.
Okay, well, let me push us over to another IRS scandal. And this one...
Boy, there's so many scandals in our country, we can't even keep up with all of them.
Yeah, here's another one.
Now come to scandal number three!
And Bob's...
The curtain where Carol Merrill is standing!
So anyway, the IRS has been having some bad times, let's put it that way. So here was another one that was
bad enough.
So here was the one just released the other day that there was a video released of IRS employees practicing their dancing, and it cost the American people $1,600.
$1,600?
Yeah, $1,600.
I thought it was
millions. No. Oh. $1,600. But then they did the Star Trek and the Gilligan Island parodies that cost about $60,000 of taxpayer money.
But then didn't the whole shebang retreat where they did that? I think that was in the millions.
They spent millions of dollars on conferences.
Money well spent.
But we're just talking about
videos. So here's this little mom and pop business that's trying to run a little restaurant. They're being taxed out the gazoo. And they're paying for this garbage?
Well, it seems like we're doing it, and they have no remorse in regard to it. So that's the first part that we have a problem with the IRS. Here's the second part, too. Obamacare. Well, Obamacare is going to bring in the IRS back into the fold again, and they're going to have to implement about 40-odd provisions of Obamacare, which is going to be the largest tax law and social policy change in the generation that we've had. And under the Obamacare, the IRS is responsible for the following. One, obtain information from employers. Two, determine who qualifies for subsidies. And three, determine who gets penalized and how much for not having or offering Obamacare. So healthcare will now be managed by a bureaucracy.
Yeah, thanks to our Supreme Court, which ruled that Obamacare was legal because it's a tax, and yet the only way Obama got it through Congress was to swear up and down the totem pole that it was. Right. Now, I have to ask you, Matt, because you mentioned to me, and I guess we could do a whole show on this.
I guess so.
You said you didn't think Roberts, the conservative justice, was selling us up the river, but that he was doing something clever and shrewd.
Well,
I've looked long and hard.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing it. What am I missing?
Well, what he was doing...
What do you think he did?
Okay, well, here's what's going on. This is my personal opinion in regard to Roberts. The Supreme Court over the last few Supreme Court justices have gone astray, okay? And Roberts believes they've gone astray. And he has believed that they've overstepped their boundaries as Supreme Court justices, as the chief justices. And so he is so worried about his legacy and being fair and making sure, because you look at most of the votes, Bob, 5-4, 5-4. I mean, it's really going along what we would call party lines. And
so did he go out of his way to not do party lines?
He rubs this the wrong way. He was in the fold. Initially, he was in the fold, but he stepped out of the fold because he thought if he could get it, the wording to a tax, it gets thrown back to Congress. Congress now then can change the law, but it's not going to change as long as the president's still.
But see, what I don't get is he's throwing it back to Congress, but if he knew that the only reason it got through Congress is that they agreed that it wasn't a tax, then why doesn't he say, according to the way this bill was drafted, they said it wasn't a tax? Well, okay then. If it's not a tax, it's illegal. Because Roberts did say you can't go charge people for some product that they don't want unless it's a tax. Well, Obama said it wasn't a tax, so why didn't he just leave well enough alone?
Okay, but when they got to court, they asked that question, is this a tax? And they flip-flopped and say, sure, it's a tax.
Yeah, well, boy, they sure did, because Obama's attorney went in one day and said it wasn't a tax, and then he went in the other day and said it was a tax, hoping the justices would go eeny, meeny, miny, mo, which one of these interpretations do I choose?
And that is our legal system as we have it today, Bob.
I'm not seeing the genius of Roberts here. It sounds to me like he wanted to protect, quote unquote, the integrity of the court.
Absolutely.
I'd have rather he protected the integrity of the Constitution that the court is there to protect.
Well, along that same lines now, so now we're just off the Supreme Court, but let me go back to Obamacare for a minute. I want to report another story to you that should never happen in the United States. So we're talking now that healthcare is going to be managed by a bureaucracy. Well, let me give you an example of what's happening even today without Obamacare. Have you heard a little about the little girl in Pennsylvania that has cystic fibrosis?
Oh, who needs the lung transplant.
10-year-old, and she can't go on an adult list because she's not 12.
She's being killed by bureaucracy, which takes on a life of its own and snuffs out real life.
So what's happening is these guys are taking away all human judgment in regard to this stuff. And so what they're doing is, instead of using common sense, it's really going to come down to the simple fact of the matter. People are pushing paper, signing docs, and making cold, hard decisions and not factoring anything in about people.
And folks, when Obama said that those who claimed they were going to have death panels with Obamacare were lying, Obama was lying when he said that they do have death panels. Obama said one thing correctly. They're not called death panels. Okay. But just because they're not called death panels doesn't mean people aren't going to die. You understand? George Orwell in 1984 said we would nullify the effects of the things we do by changing our words and softening them.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we call that, there's a word that
newspeak.
You can use. Yeah, well, it's newspeak, but it's called verbal engineering. Basically, if you can't get people to accept a word, you keep changing its definition. It's used most oftenly like in euthanasia. So in euthanasia, it started off as killing or murder. Yeah. Then it became assisted suicide or mercy killing.
Well, it's the term pro-choice. Yeah, what are they going to do, say pro-death?
Yes.
But that's what they're talking about.
Well, we're now with euthanasia. We're to the point where it's a soft landing. So if you come up with the right word, you can pitch it and it works.
Or it's called mental gymnastics, or as some of us like to call it, it's called a lot of hooey.
Well, you know, here was an interesting statement by Rand Paul, because he was looking at Obamacare, and I don't know if you guys saw this, but he was a practicing doctor. And when he was a doctor, there was about 18,000 diagnostic codes in existence. Under Obamacare, there's going to be 140,000 diagnostic codes. Now, get this. So he goes on this rant for a little bit.
I'm getting sick and needing Obamacare just listening to this stuff.
And so he goes on this little bit of rant, and he talks about there being 312 codes just for injuries from animals. 72 of those are from birds. 9 of them are from injuries caused by macaws. Now here's Rule Paul. Paul's going, I've talked to doctors. I don't know of anybody that ever treated an injury from a macaw. Okay. So, and it goes on and it gets a little even worse. Then he says there are going to be two injury codes if you were attacked or you were injured by a turtle. Now, we all know how deadly turtles are.
Turtles, boy, that's like being in an arena with a bull if you have a charging turtle coming after you.
And guess what the two codes say? One is, I was struck by the turtle, or two, I was bit by the turtle. And if it doesn't get any worse, there are two codes in Obamacare for the diagnostic codes that are used in regard to running into a pole. And you know what the two codes are? Number one is, I ran into a pole. Number two is, I ran into the pole a second time. That's it.
I know you're not joking.
No, I'm not joking.
This stuff belongs on The Daily Show or Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
This is just. Oh, well, and of course, while they're protecting us from the animals, one of Obama's czars believes animals should be able to sue people.
There you go.
Of course, they have to have lawyer representation since Dr. Doodle doesn't really exist and animals can't talk.
Well, you know, I guess there's going to be a specialty for that, and I could look into it, Bob. Maybe that's a new niche for me.
Oh my gosh!
You know, so I don't know if that's going to happen. So let's take a look at some other stuff that's in regard to Obamacare. We can go on. There's myths that we were going to talk about, but let me just hit some other highlights. How about this? Well, you know, they're talking about the tax, and the circumstances are now in regard to Obamacare that there's going to be a lot less people covered under Obamacare than they may think. And one of the reasons is that maybe people aren't going to get it from their employer.
They're not going to get it from their employer because their employers are going to find it easier to pay the Obama $2,000. Fee than to continue
$2,000.
People.
Yeah, it's $2,000. And the first, you know, that's, and it only applies to people with over 50 employees now, 50 employees. The first 30 don't count though. The first 30 don't count. So if you have like 51 employees, you have 21 people you're going to pay $2,000 for.
Or they'll hire more people part-time and won't let them go to the full-time.
And
this started out as free health care. Then it became affordable health care. Right. Now it's unaffordable, lousy care, which we're going to jam down your throat whether you want it or not. That's the kind of care we're getting.
Well, and then what they're going to get people to do is sort of take a free pass on this stuff because what's going to happen now is there's no pre-existing condition. So what's going to happen is people aren't going to go to the state agencies and get the insurance until they need it because they don't have to have insurance until they're either sick or injured.
I was just diagnosed with a serious heart condition.
Absolutely.
I want to buy my insurance today.
Then that's what's going to happen.
And then the insurance companies are going to be told, you better take them on or we're going to come after you and... So that closes down the insurance companies.
Yep.
Now, remember Obama going, now, if you like your doctor, if you like your insurance company, you get to keep it. But that was another lie.
Yeah.
He wasn't telling us, well, you get to keep them as long as they stay in business. But wink, wink, nod, nod, we're putting them out of business. So that government health care is the only health care you can have.
Yeah. How can it happen? How can you add these millions of people? Here's another thing that people don't understand about Obamacare is this. 98% of the insurance policy that people have today will not comply with Obamacare because there's a community standard, which has a lot more coverage in it than the normal policy does. So not only are we covering more people, we're covering more areas, which is only going to do what thing? Bump the prices up.
Yeah.
And then here's an interesting thing. The original form for individuals for applying for Obamacare was 21 pages long. They managed to reduce it down to 3 pages. So now it's only three pages.
Yeah, but the law itself is like 2,000 pages.
But it's like 6 feet high when you stack it up all together. I mean, it's really crazy.
Hey, now, I'm only a little bit taller than that Obamacare.
And then if you're a family, your application is going to be about 11 pages. But if you don't need the subsistence, then it will only be about 4 pages long for you.
Well, Matt, I have a question. Yeah. When the Republicans were trying to take back the House in 2010, one of the things I was hearing them say is, well, we can't repeal abundant care, but we can defund it. So why haven't they been there for over a year? Why don't they defund it?
Well, you know
they
what?
They could stop giving the IRS the money to do this stuff with. They could,
well,
couldn't
they? That's an interesting point because...
Is it because it's taken on a life of its own again?
Yeah, it is.
And they're thinking, well, the New York Times might call us uncompassionate if we do that.
Well,
and,
let's think about this. There's a portion right now where this thing's supposed to start implementing in October 1st where people are supposed to be able to submit applications and stuff for this. But the reality is there's only 33 states that have actually established exchange changes. So there's 17 states that are all up in the air, and the IRS is just grabbing new and more responsibilities and powers for making decisions.
Wasn't that all this was about? Power? I want to take money from the rich and give it to the poor. When he said free health care, he meant for those of you that don't work, it's going to be free. For those who do work, we're going to just take that money away from you. Isn't that the redistribution of wealth, the socialism? Isn't that the whole point of all this? Isn't that what's really going on?
Well, that's what it seems like. I mean, he really pitched it. It's the wealthy, it's the wealthy, it's the wealthy. But the problem is, we're going to subsidize. Somebody's got to pay for it if you got insurance.
When in history has a country having a revolution where rich were pitted against poor? When has it ever turned out good? When has it ever become anything but an evil dictatorship?
Well,
I think the answer is never.
I guess that's the natural progression, and hopefully it doesn't happen in the United States.
Well, and coincidentally, the liberals these days are calling themselves progressives, as in natural progression. Well, Matt, the time went by far too quickly. We'll have you on again soon. You always have a lot to say, and it's fun talking to you.
Thanks, Bob.
These are not fun issues, but at least it's fun to talk with somebody who keeps a sense of humor about it and keeps his wits about him, and Matt's a tax attorney, so he might be able to navigate you through some of this stuff.
We could only hope.
All right, I will see you next week, everybody. We'll talk to you then.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.